created the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
All right, today's episode is brought to you by Ting. So visit bcs.ting.com, BCS for the Brian Callen Show, .ting.com, for a $25 service credit or device discount. You know, the thing is, when you start getting a popular podcast, people come and say, we want to sponsor it. But for me, you know, I've got to believe in the product. I just have to. I know about Ting from Joe Rogan, who I believe uses the service. I've heard nothing but good things. Let me explain to you why Ting is a good and responsible product, and this is why I'm actually promoting them on the Brian Callen Show. There are no contracts, okay? There are no bundling or ride-along services, no overage charges, no penalties. You get credits for unused service. There are no add-on charges, no mysterious line items on your bill. Unlimited devices on one plan is great. It's got a powerful online account control panel, okay? So you can do all kinds of stuff online. And there's no hold customer support. How's that sound, huh? You don't hold, okay? So having said all that, the bottom line is it's a pay-as-you-go service. The service is basically a la carte to your needs. When you don't want the service anymore, you can get out, all right? That's what I call a responsible, ethical company. And I first learned about it through Joe Rogan doing his podcast, and I'm proud they're sponsoring this podcast now. You know, that's kind of my pitch for Ting. I think it's a very good company. As soon as they get it paired up with the iPhone 5, I am going to switch over. I like it. It sounds like a great service. So let me once again encourage you to visit bcs.ting.com, and you'll get a $25 service credit or device discount. All right, everybody. This is the Brian Callen Show, and my dear and very old friend David Blaine is here. David, how you doing?
And it's true, I am an old friend, literally.
Hold that mic close to your because you've got so much soda
kids
in your
we're
voice.
We're not kids anymore, but I did meet Brian when I was a teenager.
Yep.
And
I saw one of your first magic tricks, didn't I? I mean, sort of.
No, but you saw me do my first like performance.
Right, I saw your first sort of performance.
Yeah, when I was like trying to figure out what magic was to me and what it meant, and the reason you've been so important in my life is because as a teenager, you were a little older than me, and you recommended so many incredible books, and you told me about so many extraordinary people, and you opened my eyes in so many ways. And one of the best quotes you ever said to me, and I think I was 18 when you said this, and it was very important to me because I grew up pretty much with just my mother. She did get remarried, but my mother was, you know, was the main figure in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I always felt like, you know, like a kid with a mother who just let him do, even though she also led me in the right way and had me reading books since I was a little boy. But I didn't have a father figure, and you had such a great father figure, and you would tell me some of the quotes that he gave to you. And one of the quotes that you told me was, always surround yourself with people that are going to help you grow. Mm. And you said that at the right age, because I was just, you know, trying to figure out who I was and trying to learn as much as I could at that age. And that specific quote reminded me that it is important to spend time trying to learn and trying to grow and trying to
improve. Hold the mic close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I appreciate that compliment, but I will say that, you know, you also had the wherewithal to be hungry and to be curious. And one of the things that I'd love to take credit for some of your success, but the truth is, in my opinion, having known you from a very early age and watching you develop, you've always been fascinated with the human condition. And more importantly, I think you've always been fascinated with struggle and overcoming adversity and what it takes to be quote unquote great. And great's a big umbrella. But that's always kind of what, you know, your reading of Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, and those kinds of people. You were always a searcher. Even as a kid, you were fascinated and were able to tell the difference between people of significance and people who were not. I'm not as good at that as you are at all.
Why? No, I actually think everybody's important in a way. But even though a lot of people are important, a lot of people, you know, tend to go with their impulses or their, you know, the temptations much more than others. And I fall into that category often. But it's like, you know, nice to be reminded that, which what we just talked about, that, you know, like when you, the reason you do what you do or the reason I do what I do isn't actually a selfish reason. It's that we love to give people, you know, something from within us that's very personal that we've spent a lot of time working on and that means, you know, that means the world to us.
Well, that's something that I've always noticed about you, and I know this to be true in your heart. You've never been motivated by money, and you've never been motivated by fame, and you still are not, and that's a fact. I know, and I tell people this, but I won't say it, you know, we won't get into details. I know for a fact that you've said no to serious money, because you didn't feel like it represented who you were.
Well, no,
and it was,
I mean,
a compromise.
I just always feel like it's best to work hard for what, you know, I like having to work really hard for things. So I don't like anything that comes too easy. It's always been that way.
What do you think your fascination, though, with, you know, Nazi concentration camp survivors? Well, what is your fascination with people that overcome adversity like that, the extremes?
I mean, first of all, I'm Jewish. Second of all, my mother lived a very hard life. And, you know, when she suffered with cancer and fought that battle, she was always so optimistic and always so, you know, encouraging. And so it was amazing to me. And I think that really began my obsession with the Holocaust and what people went through. And then I found guys like Viktor Frankl or Primo Levi. And, you know, it's incredible to see people that can come out of such a horrific condition with something so enlightening or so beautiful.
Yeah, I remember you kind of going through your mother's death, and I remember going to your mother's funeral, and she was so important to you. And those seminal moments are kind of what we, when we go through something terrible, you have a choice whether to react in a positive or a negative way. You obviously reacted or used that tragedy
in both ways
to become a stronger person. Sure. I mean, there's a great deal of mourning for people, I think, that can sometimes go on for a lifetime, or certainly, you know, 10 or 20 years. But can you remember seminal moments?
By the way, that we're sitting here in a smoke-filled room.
I know.
Because we were just practicing something.
We were practicing something, and it smells like lots of smoke. But can you remember the thinkers, the writers, the books that sort of changed everything for you?
Yeah, that's an easy question for me. So the first book that my mother gave me when I was about 11 was Siddhartha, which really left an imprint on
my
brain. Yep.
Great book.
It was really, really important to me. But I mean, all of the other books that she read to me as a little kid, you know, it started, you know, Shel Silverstein, you know, The Giving Tree, and all the Dr. Seuss, and, you know, everything that I used to sift through and read. I think, you know, there was a really amazing study that was done. They took 500 kids, I think it was 500, from inner city schools. And they took a bunch of kids that were really terrible math students. They couldn't learn math. They were all pretty much on par, failing everything and just weren't doing well. So this woman took 500 kids, I believe, split them into two equal groups, and gave them the exact same curriculum.
I know this study is fascinating.
It's amazing, yeah. Right? So what they did is, from one half of those kids, they would teach 40 minutes a day, 4 days a week, or whatever it was, and the other half, they would teach 10 minutes less per day. So it was they had much less math instructions and lessons going on, but for those extra 10 minutes a day that totaled maybe 40 minutes a week, they were taught that their brain is a muscle that can grow.
That's great. That's
and
exactly
because
right.
These kids were taught that, their brain actually absorbed the information significantly better. So I think their scores were 80% higher than the kids that were learning math more, but weren't taught for 10 minutes a day that their brain is a muscle that can grow.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's
unbelievable. So it's context. So you would probably agree that a lot of success is the emotional framework in which you approach life. I mean, so in other words, you know, positive attitude, or even just knowing that you are capable of something. You know, they've also done studies where they broke up two groups of students. And they said, told one group, you're really gifted. We've done some studies on you. You're insanely gifted.
That's right.
And the other ones, they didn't tell them. And the kids that were gifted, guess what?
Yep.
Blew through every score and crushed. So much of
No. The kids that they told were gifted and were doing so great. When they did the second test, their scores were much lower because they
right.
were afraid of not being as gifted.
No, that's so, right. But here's
ones
what
that
I meant.
They complimented on the hard work that they were
yes.
doing. They said, you are working so hard
that's
on that.
Right. That's what I
those
meant.
Those ones excelled. That's
and,
really funny.
And by the way,
but
the other thing that they said is this. We've done a bunch of studies on you, and we can tell from our studies that you're going to have a spike in your intelligence somewhere in the middle of the year. And guess what? They all did. So and you kind of, as a, we don't have to talk too much about magic because I'm more interested in the man behind the magic, but a lot of that kind of stuff is suggestion. A lot of that kind of stuff is learning how the human mind works. I mean, I would imagine, and knowing what human tendencies are. I mean, you become a better magician when you...
I think you become for me personally, I become a better magician by failing, by going out there and messing up. Because you have to learn how to quickly adjust. But
let's talk about that more, because I have a lot of young people that listen to this, and I always say that to young people. I love what you just said, because so much of people think that success is easy in some ways. And in fact, you fail way more than you succeed when you are looked at as a success, right?
Yeah, I think that's why LeBron James is so incredible, because failure doesn't mean anything to him. He just goes. Like, nothing can stop the guy.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? So he can get... You can see it in him. You could
well,
see
it's
it.
The,
he'll
it's,
get, he'll
yeah.
get knocked down repetitiously, but he just keeps going like a bull.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really watch that much, but watching, you know, just, anybody that's like that, you know, like Kobe Bryant, when he got taken down for the whole scandal, which, you know, it obviously was a huge impact to him, but he became the best basketball player. Played better than he ever played.
Yeah,
so it
just
was like
kept going.
Having everything against him made him even stronger and hungrier, basically, and made him excel in the one thing that he loved.
That's right.
You know,
that's
so
right.
Although the you know the proper school of thought, I think, for magic is you practice. You sit in a mirror. You practice. You practice. You practice. I've just never.
Isn't
been
that the way it is for everything, though? I know with stand up, that you know, you learn how to allocate your space. You learn how to talk to yourself because. So much of life is when you're walking through life, there are so many distractions, man. And they're beautiful distractions.
Yeah,
I'm talking about everything.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But so much of it is learning how to not only talk to yourself properly, but allocating your mental space. And you can get good at that. Like you said, it's a muscle. You can get really good at just learning how to shut off your brain to certain things, not indulging in those thoughts before they happen, and gently steering your mind back to what you're supposed to think about.
Yeah.
That's what I do anyway. I mean,
that's
I don't know.
What you're amazing at, and that's what I need to learn how to do. I'm so, and that's why I think I do those stunts. Is I think it's like a rare time that I really get complete focus and clarity.
Yeah,
it's like because when I go back to life, it's like you know the real world. I get distracted so easily. It's really crazy.
That's interesting. So it's kind of like your temple. You kind of go into this.
And I'm also a last minute worker. It's like I wait till everything is as late as possible, and then I work in overdrive. But like if I have a month to do something, I probably okay, and then 3 hours before I'm working like a maniac.
You're an extremist.
It's really bizarre.
You're a crammer.
It's not good. You know, I wish
do you think
I
you're an extremist?
Yeah.
You are.
Terrible.
Why do you think that is? Do you have any idea? Hard to say, right?
I think it goes back to early childhood.
It's also what makes you so successful in a weird way. I mean, kind of like your biggest liability is also your biggest strength, right?
I think the thing that allows me to work as a magician is really I always try to do the opposite of what I see, because usually everything that I see, I usually think, huh, you know, but the things that I see when I do magic are so different. Like, you know, what I see is, you know, just like a person's emotion, or it's weird because magic is an art of deception in a weird way. But for me, it's kind of like an art of finding truth. So it's really,
what do you mean?
I mean, it's like, what's amazing to me in magic is the truth that's created. Like, I guess it's kind of like
you, so. In other
like,
words, you see people when you see somebody actually react like,
right,
"Oh my god!"
Right, right. When they there's a believable, and if it's not, if it's like pushed or forced or my sensor buzzes.
It's out. A little bit like this guy who said, I like porn when I believe the actors, not
right.
when I don't.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. Most porn, if I see the girl faking, I'm like, oh, whatever. But if I think she's really into
if you
it.
Think it's real, it's like,
wow.
It's in with acting. If you think somebody's like, just like anything, if you believe it, there's like an, you know, your
That's how I heard Gene Hackman. Somebody said, well, the reason he's a great actor is because I believe everything he does.
Right.
And I was like, geez, you know, yeah, that's a pretty authentic way of describing somebody.
And didn't Robert Duvall say in order to be a great actor, all you need is 20 years of experience?
Yeah, that's right. All you need is 20 years. Let me ask.
A pause.
Yeah. I had to pause with David because he's going to take care of something. But I'm sitting in his I'm in his office. Well, it's really kind of an apartment office because he's got another apartment, but he's a minimalist. He's not into a lot of crap. He's got a couple black boots, a whole bunch of black t-shirts, a very sparse bed, and I'm surrounded by videotapes, no DVDs, videotapes and what looked like almost VHS tapes just from years and years of magic and performances of other people. And he draws a great deal of inspiration from other people, which is really interesting. He has these framed photographs of his heroes, from Muhammad Ali to Jimi Hendrix to, you know, different painters and stuff. And he's always feeding himself. You know, there's nothing wrong with basically gaining your inspiration from other people. I would argue that that's where you get it from a lot of times. Yes, music and stuff and your own mind and your own heart, I guess, and your faith or whatever, but there are a lot of people that have set examples before you, you know, and that's what's interesting. That's certainly what I do. What I try to do is, you know, there are a lot of people that I just go, damn, you shame me with your effort and your courage and your originality. And I think David feels the same way. You know, there's nothing wrong with admiring people. You don't have to admire the total person, but admiring, you know, pieces of the person, what they have done, not necessarily the other things they've done, but the, you know, the central through line of their life. That's what to look at. That's kind of like finding the good in somebody and praising it. That's kind of like the example of, there was always like rumors and maybe even a lot of fact of Martin Luther King having had extramarital affairs. Are you going to focus on that? Are you going to focus on the guy that stood up against the hoses, et cetera, and set the example, and the rest is history? I think I'd rather focus on that. They say Gandhi took a vow of celibacy because his mother died while he was banging another woman behind his wife's back. That's what I hear. I don't know if that's true, but certainly a substantiated rumor. And it's kind of what led him to say, I'm not going to have sex at all anymore. You know, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on kind of what he chose to do. And what he chose to do, by the way, the through line between people like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, is they put themselves, their very being, their physical appetites, their being, beneath principle. And that's what's so amazing. Those are the people we actually admire. Those people that say, I am more than my appetites. I'm more than this flesh and blood. I'm more than even my screams of pain. There is something bigger than I am. And that's, I suppose, the ultimate measure of a man and probably the best way to define a hero. So we'll be back with David Blaine after these brief messages. And by the way, I'm going to be at the Fort Lauderdale Improv June 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. And we're back. There's so much. I watch you prepare for stuff, and there's so much to it, man. There's so much work to it. A lot of it's not that fun for the end result, right?
No, I think the whole process is fun.
Do you like the process sometimes? Because for me, like, you want to know the truth about stand-up for me? I like writing it more than I like. I like writing it and working out the beats and getting it perfect more than I like performing and even the laughter and accolades. I swear to God.
Wow.
After a while, you get inoculated to that incredible reaction. The crowd loves you and laughs. That's always great. What I really like is the process of discovery. Discovering, because I believe,
why you have to write a movie?
Well, I am. That's what I'm doing right now. Yes.
And you have a part for a magician?
Yeah, I've always said, I'll say it on the podcast, I've always said I've seen you act. I think you should do a movie. I think you could win an Oscar. I said crazy. It on when we did that biography thing.
That's
said,
insane, you know, but I would love to do something with you.
Well, I'm going to have something. I'm going to have a project that I'll be done with soon that I think is going to be amazing. But that's kind of the idea. Like, I really like the idea of, like, when you write a story or when you write a when you have an hour, like I'm working on my next hour special, I like the notion that it already exists in perfection. It already exists. It already exists up there somewhere in its perfection. And it's up to you to keep showing up to keep, like, if you keep showing up, it reveals itself to you slowly.
That's
it's kind
what
of
Henry Ford
faith.
Said in the opening of his autobiography. Says, the car existed. I was just an antenna that was able to receive the signals.
I love that because that's what the guy who won the Fields Medal said as well.
Yeah,
he said,
it's already out
there. It's already out there. I just happen to have a frequency that can...
I actually agree with that.
You do?
Yeah. Hmm. I agree with that completely.
Did you ever want to write... do you ever want to write a book or anything? Do you ever want to express yourself in another medium besides magic?
Magic's my favorite. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's something I've done since I was 4 or 5, so it's kind of like everything to me.
Huh. Yeah, so you don't feel the need to dilute that expression with something else.
No, but studying acting was really productive. You know, the Orson Welles quote was, a magician is just an actor playing the part of a magician. I think before I took it seriously when I met you, I think learning how to present things in a believable way, like, which is acting, you know, living truthfully in an imaginary circumstance, basically, is... You know,
it's a huge part of what you do.
I think it's the most important part of making magic interesting, because otherwise it's all just, you know, silly tricks. But when presented in the right context, it's actually something very interesting and almost moving.
Absolutely.
There's a famous book in the magic world called Magic and Showmanship. It's by Henning Nelms. And he explains magic like this. He says, if I just made you reach into your pocket right now, mm-hmm. and there was a sandwich in your pocket... Mm-hmm. You'd say, oh, that's a cool trick. How do you do that? But if you said to me, David, I'm hungry, I'd love a sandwich. And I say, reach into your pocket. And now you pull the sandwich out. It's two different contexts. And one is amazing and the other is a neat trick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting distinction.
That's cool, right?
Yeah. What you've, you know, your work has kind of exposed you. And as you get older, for me, you know, you meet a lot of people and you meet a lot of significant people, you know, meet people that kind of like have a lot of money or who are very successful in something. And a lot of times, you know, what you kind of, as you get older, the mystery of life kind of starts to devolve in the sense that you go, well, you just worked really hard. You had a talent for something and you struggled a lot and you had a very good system of sort of work and a good mind that led you to this place. So it's not as impressive necessarily as you become more accomplished, but of the people that you've met, and you've met a lot of them, is there anybody who stands out, or any three people that really stand out as really impressive people that are almost your heroes in a sense? Do you have any heroes?
And my mother's my first and foremost hero.
Watching her struggle through her cancer?
No, just her whole value on life. I mean, she grew up with a very wealthy family, but left her family at age 18, moved to Brooklyn and, you know, did everything, you know, taught kids in inner city schools and really tried to help people. And she, you know, she lived a pretty free life that wasn't revolved around anything materialistic. I think she got sick of it growing up. So she taught me at a young age not to value things that have no real meaning, which was, I was pretty lucky to have a mother like that. She would, you know, read to me all the time or take me to museums and just show me things and teach me. And
she exposed you to what's out there, what's possible, important. What the bar, how high the
right.
bar was.
And she never had any limitations, like anything. She believed everything was possible, basically, but not in a silly way.
Is there an artist, though, an artist or someone, a writer, somebody who sets the bar for you, who awes you in their accomplishment, that nags at you, that pushes you to be better, greater?
I mean, anytime I, you know, yeah, I mean, there's so many people. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's infinite. You know, any artist that I admire that just worked really hard and hit that chord, whether it's Michael Jackson or Robert De Niro or Woody Allen or Stephen Hawking, or everybody that I read about that I love and their stories and how they, or Kafka, or, you know, Dostoevsky, mm-hmm. how they used difficulties or you know, their trials and tribulations to push through and do things that were, you know, that shouldn't be possible or that that nobody could do. So yeah,
it's that great quote we were talking about with what's his name, who walked the tightrope between the World Trade Center. He said, they said, "What do you think?" And he said, "It's impossible. Now let's get to work."
Philippe Petit. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's very generous, too, as an artist. Because when I was filming my first show, Street Magic, he was just walking by on the street, and I knew who he was. And he came up to me while I was doing it, and he basically was also a magician. So he helped me do the magic to the crowd, and they went nuts because he challenged me, but while switching cards into play and everything, like a fellow magician that's unselfish would do.
Wow.
And then he just walked off and the crowd went nuts.
Wow. Yeah, and did you knew who he was?
I knew who he was. He didn't know me. I was just a young magician.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's amazing. And you know, I went to your house one time and you had a library of books, some of which were written in Latin, on magic.
Which I still have.
Yeah. You still have. How many of those books have you read or had read to you?
Well, yeah, I have the originals in Latin, but then I have the, you know, the English version. So I actually read them in English.
Wow.
Yeah. And
it'd be really impressive if you read them in Latin.
No, but my friend does. But it's difficult, but you can make out some things. But
right.
No.
But yeah, your buddy does. Yeah,
yeah, Bill. There are very old books on magic that my friend who has a library, Conjuring Arts Research Center, has translated every single different book, so anybody has access to it, and it's lots of information. It's pretty incredible.
You think that you're going to always do magic? Can you chart and see your life?
Magic till I die.
Magic. I feel that way about stand-up. Stand-up till I die. Yeah. You know, acting. Stand-up is like that just sort of, I even like the travel, and I even like the hotels, and I even like the loneliness. Yeah. I like it all.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. You know, you always feel kind of like at magic, and I think stand-up in the same way, is a very solitary existence in some ways. You know, you're always in your own head coming up with ideas. What's the best angle? What's the best way to do this? You know, what's the best way to kind of awe a crowd, right? I mean, I think stand-up is basically a magic trick. I always say it. I think comedy is surprise. You know, I always tell, you know, comics, don't try to write funny. Try to surprise and shock yourself. And if you do that and you're coming from an honest place, you're going to elicit the same reaction from them.
The three words that I've written up on my wall right here that I think are the most important words in magic, it's MIB. And those letters stand for, is it meaningful? Is it interesting? And is it believable? So that's kind of like the code to magic for me.
Meaningful, interesting, believable. You know what? I think you could apply the same thing to stand-up. I really do.
For sure.
I mean, first of all, you know, I always say, if you're going to write stand-up, please don't write trying to be funny. First, mine your head and your heart and figure out what you think about. And I always say, ask yourself what you're afraid of. You know how I write? I go, what am I afraid of? Who do I wish I was? what am I ashamed of? Those are the three things
work
at.
My brother's a stand-up comedian in L.A., and
he never says hi to me.
He's obsessed with you, though. He loves you, so I know he's going to be listening.
Well, why don't you have him come say hang? If he's your brother, obviously, I'm going to take him. I'm going to hang out with him.
I would love that.
Why don't you call me and tell me, hey, my brother, you know, is around. I'll, you know, if I can do stuff for him.
Well, he's the reason I was referring to him is because as a stand-up, he applies the same. We're very different, but we're very similar. And I know that he thinks the same way as me, but an even way more extreme version of it. But he's so bright and so talented. And the things he says, Brian.
You kind of really moved me because your TED speech, and I recommend everybody go see your TED speech. You say, I think you mentioned your brother was there.
Yeah.
And you kind of like broke down at the end. Can you explain what you said and why? Like what was behind that? Do you know?
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I think that was more about the work that goes into everything, because I think usually when people see it, you know, me as a magician, they think, oh, it's all tricks or da da da. You could buy it in a magic store, but it's really not like that. It's actually like laborious hours and hours and years and years and years of sacrifice and work that goes into trying to, you know, trying to do the right thing with magic or with the art of magic.
Or holding your breath for longer than anybody in the world.
And obviously, when you hold your breath every day for a couple of years, it destroys brain cells and your memory starts to evaporate. And I can't remember anything like I used to, but so...
he sacrificed your fucking brain's well-being to break a world record. But
I was so nervous to give that talk because it was in front of a room of all of these people that I admire and respect, like Steve Wozniak and all these Nobel Prize winners and Craig Venter and just all of these scientists and doctors and...
So I always talk about Craig Venter. He's another genius. He's in synthetic biology and what, et cetera.
So I was extremely nervous. And he made, Richard Warman made me the last talk. And at the end, I said, basically what magic is to me is it's practice and training and experimenting while pushing through the pain to be the best that I can be. And I think when I said that, I felt like it summed up like all of the work that I put into it. So I kind of choked up, and it was also the stress of being there and actually talking about this and trying to be.
You know what, man? You know what? You can never look bad when you're vulnerable. Yeah, you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing. It moved me. And I was just thinking about how so much of our life is spent trying not to be vulnerable and trying to be tough or trying to act like things don't bother us. And in a weird way, when you're vulnerable, you see somebody break down and it's honest, it just never looks bad. It kind of brings you closer to the person because they are expressing what exists in you, you know. Maybe that's kind of what high art does, you know. It makes you laugh and cry.
That's interesting, yeah.
I'm a fucking really interesting guy, so.
You are very interesting, please. That's for sure.
Please.
You also have serious pecs going on there.
I have a good body. Let's not kid ourselves. Your body changes drastically.
I think in the last decade I've gained, and I'm not kidding about this, I think I've gained and lost about 1,000 pounds.
You're such an extremist, and I believe that. Yeah, you can go from just huge and muscular and sick, and then the next 3 months, you're just like, whatever.
I've gone into organ failure, and I go through all these crazy things for these things.
These stunts.
Yeah, everybody close to me, just do the card tricks. But the stunts are basically really, in a weird way, like, you know, I like to try to make them into cool images, but they're really kind of personal as well. So I think it's like a really difficult journey or task that I try to give my.
But how do you keep yourself motivated? How do you talk to yourself when you're going through hunger and thirst and claustrophobia and just isolation? I mean, how do you?
I think that stuff I'm really good at. I was always good at things like that. Even when I was a kid and I got in trouble, and they'd say, "Oh, go stand in the corner." I'd be like, "It's easy."
What's driving you? Competition? The idea that you can beat your own mind, or what is it? Do you draw a blank and not talk to yourself?
It's like being able to do something that seems really difficult. So it's weird. You know, it might even be as simple as just numbers. Like when I was holding my breath as a kid, I just wanted to get to 3.5 minutes. So I worked really hard to get there, and I would get to, 320, 322. So it might just be something like I set a goal that I feel I can't do, and then I try to get to it.
You know what's funny about the way you talk is I always ask like successful people what kind of drives them, and everybody has their own motivation. And a lot of times people don't even need to know their motivation. You know, whatever works for you works. The main thing is that you're doing it, you know.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple like that.
Well, I know you got a lot of work to do on this upcoming incredible thing you're going to do, so I'm going to let you go.
Well, thank you for being here, Brian.
Thank you for 23 years of friendship, my friend. You're one of the special ones. And thank you for doing the Brian Callen Show. I need a cooler name.
And now should we just go cuddle?
Let's go cuddle, brother. Let's go cuddle. I want to go eat. I got to go do this thing. I got to shoot something. Thanks, guys, for listening. That's David Blaine, the one and only.
Thank you, Brian. You fucking rule.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.